I'm a very grateful believer in Jesus Christ who struggles with perfectionism, people pleasing, grief, and shame. My name is Kim. Kim. Philippians 1:6 says, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. I was born in Long Beach, California, and spent the first 9 years of my life living just a few blocks from the beach. I am the oldest of three blonde-haired, blue-eyed, skinny little girls, and I am a classic firstborn. My dad was a very hardworking, well-known Christian psychologist, and although my mom had her degree in nursing, she spent most of her life being a stay-at-home mom raising my two sisters and I. My mom always said I was her most difficult child as I was incredibly smart, independent, and strong-willed. Even as a baby, I was so adventurous and full of energy that my parents would have to harness me into my crib and high chair because I just would not stay put, climbing and diving repeatedly out of both. I walked and talked at an incredibly young age, and this seemed to always catch the attention of other people, not to mention the attention of my psychologist father. I soon became a frequent guest and test subject at the college graduate classes my father taught, practicing and demonstrating for he and his students child development and child testing concepts. I watched my dad work three jobs, and I learned at a very early age the importance of working hard, performance, and the costs of doing it right and wrong. When I was two, shortly after my first sister was born, both of my mother's parents died 6 months apart. Not long after that, my father was diagnosed with a seizure disorder. Needless to say, my mom had her hands full. My new little sister sucked her fingers, and I was the quiet, observant child, learning how to properly keep up with her big sister, while I was a constant challenge, missing the undivided attention I usually had from my parents before their life got turned upside down. My parents were both strong Christians and highly active and looked up to in the church community, so it is no surprise that I accepted Christ at a very young age after my mom had read me a Christian bedtime story. I was always highly involved in Sunday school and youth group, and much of my education, 11 out of 19 years, was spent in Christian schooling. So I developed a very thorough and strong knowledge of the Bible. I even had the privilege to spend the summer between second and third grade experiencing life as a missionary kid in Japan. When I came back from Japan, my best friend back home had started taking gymnastics, so this ultimately started my career in gymnastics. I loved it, and it gave me an outlet for my energy and adventurous ways. The following summer, my family moved to Oregon. This was when the 1976 Summer Olympics was being aired, and gymnast Nadia Comaneci got her first perfect 10. I wanted to be that perfect gymnast. That summer, I took a summer gymnastics class. However, because of my previous club gymnastics experience, I attempted to do tricks without proper coaching and spotting, which resulted in the fracture of both bones in my left arm. I distinctly remember looking down at my arm and seeing what looked like a Z or two elbows. I spent the rest of my summer stuck in a cast, running around as active as ever. My parents were still getting us settled into our new Oregon life, so unfortunately, no one was really paying attention to how my arm was healing. Months later, when we took off my cast, we discovered my break had healed with a pinched nerve. We spent the next 6 months traveling up to OHSU, having weekly nerve conduction tests and nerve stimulation procedures, trying to evaluate, heal, and repair my pinched nerve. As a family, we fervently prayed for a miracle and the healing of my hand. The medical team was beginning to suggest the need to take me into surgery to try and repair the damage to my nerve. As my parents and I went to that last decision-making appointment and they shoved those needles into my hand to test it all again, they found my hand nerves were healed. It was a miracle, my miracle. The use of my hand was returned mostly. I was left with a small reminder of God's love and faithfulness to me that I still have today. When my wrist is placed at a 90-degree angle, I am unable to straighten my middle finger. Otherwise, it functions fine. As I was still strong-willed, independent, and adventurous, and now healthy again, I begged to go back to gymnastics. I still wanted to be that next perfect gymnast. My parents gave in, but this time I went was sent back to a safe, competitive club gymnastic program. Despite my finger flaw, I worked my way up in the program till I was one level behind those who go to the Olympics, and it consumed my entire life. I was a junior high workaholic. Now in seventh grade, I went to the gym 6 days a week for 5.5 hours a day. I got up in the morning, went to school. After school, I took a bus to the public library by my gym. I would study for a little bit, then go to gym practice until 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. Then when I finally got back home, I ate dinner. If I had any homework left, I had to finish it, then get to bed, just to turn around and do it all over again the next day. I spent my Saturdays at the gym, and the only day to relax was Sundays, church day. I had become much more shy, quiet, and introverted. I began to notice my friends at school talking about activities and fun things that I couldn't participate in, and I began to feel the loss of my childhood slipping away. I wanted to have fun. As much as I liked gymnastics, that level of dedication wasn't worth the sacrifice. So I decided to quit, and my parents supported my decision. I decided to use my gymnastic skills in a social way, and I took up cheerleading. From eighth grade on, all except my junior year when I switched back to public high school and missed cheer tryouts, I was a cheerleader. As I moved school systems 4 times between fourth and 12th grade, I learned to make friends easily. I was a good student, graduating high school with honors, and I was highly involved in school and church activities. From the outside, it looked like I had it all. On the inside, I was an emotional time bomb. I didn't know how to just be. Being raised by a well-respected Christian psychologist and loving Christian stay-at-home mom was very similar to growing up being a pastor's kid. I felt the intense need to have it all. How lucky to have a built-in counseling center in my home. However, it is nearly impossible to apply counseling principles to your own family. Every time my father would start even sounding psychological, my sisters and I would let him know, "You can't use that psychology crap on us." Unfortunately, that is probably exactly what I needed. I had bought into the perfectionistic, performance-based, people-pleasing philosophy, and no matter what I did, I was never quite good enough. I wasn't perfect. I could have done it better. I became extremely sensitive to criticism or any suggestions as to how to improve. Rather than seeing my successes, I saw my accomplishments as failures. I hid my internal thought life from everyone else around me, thinking if I could just get it right or do it better the next time, maybe I could make up for my previous failures. I certainly couldn't go to my parents or my constantly changing friends and share with them my true feelings. That would just draw more attention to my imperfections and failures, causing them to be even more disappointed in me. I was sucked into this abusive whirlpool of my mind, utterly alone and consumed with my negative self-talk and feelings. My imperfections made me indebted to everyone around me, making everyone else's needs more important than my own. I lacked boundaries and became extremely codependent. I became what I call a disillusioned, discouraged perfectionist. With so many emotional bruises and wounds, if people could have seen on the outside what I had on the inside, they would have rushed me to a trauma emergency department. Eventually, my relationship with God also began to suffer. I knew God loved me just as my parents loved me, but I still felt it was conditional based on my performance. I knew all about Judgment Day. I knew I was going to be responsible to God for how I lived this life. I also knew He saw everything. How could God really love me when He could see all my imperfections and failures? God wanted us to be good and behave Christ-like, and Jesus was perfect. So I thought I needed to be perfect. Growing up with that premise just furthered my performance-based philosophy. I remembered sitting in church numerous times, repeating the prayer to turn my life over to God and begging God to forgive me for being such a disappointment and failure, such a sinner. As I headed into my late teens and young adulthood, my secret abusive thought life began seeping out into my actual life. I began to realize I was never going to succeed in being perfect, so I just stopped trying. I set aside many of my core values and began socially drinking, smoking cloves, and even occasionally using marijuana. I was too much of a control freak to really enjoy the effects of being under the influence, but I still wanted to participate in the social activities. Going to parties and occasionally using was just part of that package, although most of the time, I just became the designated driver. My sexuality, however, was another thing, another story. As I entered the dating arena, I found I could please men sexually, and as I was indebted to everyone around me, I found it very difficult to maintain boundaries and ended up giving away what I viewed as my most precious gift, my virginity. The guilt and shame that crept into my life over no longer being pure was more than I could bear. I now believed I was completely flawed and would never be perfect or acceptable again. I was consumed with the same shame I'm sure Adam and Eve felt when they ate that fruit and needed to cover themselves before God. Guilt and shame became my constant companions and the voices or messages that played in my head. I spent the next 30 years of my life trying to rectify my perceived constant mistakes and failures. The Cliff Note version of those next several years goes like this. Towards the end of my sophomore year of college, I got pregnant. I dropped out of college to have a baby. I got married trying to make that right. I got a job working in my dad's psychology office using the little bit of college I had. 3 months into our marriage, we did have a beautiful baby girl who, much to my surprise, is one of my greatest accomplishments. My husband and I tried to make the best of things, but we were young and very unprepared for all the adult responsibilities. My husband chose to explore relationships outside our marriage. Despite being given the option to repair our marriage, my husband chose to move on. Hurt, abandoned, and totally betrayed now added to my feelings of failure and internal turmoil. Just as I had been told when I came home pregnant, I believed the saying, "You made your bed, now you're going to have to sleep in it." I needed to suck it up, start over, and make the best of things. Grieving and recovery was not an option. So again, I dove headfirst back into trying to fix my failures with my workaholic performance-based behaviors. I knew my husband was irresponsible with money, so I assumed the majority of our marital debt. Now being single again, I made a decision to go back to school to become a nurse, so I could better support my daughter and I. I worked full-time, went to school three-quarter time, all while raising my daughter as a single parent. There is a saying, behind every good kid, there is a parent sure they are screwing things up. I was sure that was me. I saw the heartache in my daughter as she questioned me about why we weren't good enough for her daddy to stay and why he stayed with his new family. How do you build self-esteem and self-worth in your own kid when you have none yourself? In the winter of 1996, my dad, in fear I would never leave my comfortable job at his office and actually go to nursing school, employed some tough love and purposely fired me from my management position at his office. Although this was emotionally devastating for me, it was the exact catalyst I needed. I got admitted to nursing school, sold my home, and in the beginning of summer of 1996, my daughter and I moved into the dorm there at nursing school. While I was attending nursing school, I got a job working at the VA hospital, which not only helped support my daughter and I, but also helped me become proficient at many of my nursing skills. I finally completed my bachelor's degree in nursing in 1998, 5 years after my divorce. I officially began my nursing career working as a nurse in the county jail. But as I was an adrenaline junkie, this wasn't quite exciting enough. I had always wanted to go into critical care or emergency medicine, so in the spring of 1999, I took a position on a trauma orthopedic floor in one of our local trauma hospitals with the ultimate goal of ending up in a trauma ICU. I did finally make the move into a trauma ICU in April of 2002. I was an excellent nurse and spent the next 11 years fine-tuning my nursing skills and experience, eventually becoming a highly respected trauma resuscitation nurse. During all this time, I somehow made it through the very painful teenage years with my daughter. She finally moved out and started a family of her own, leaving me alone for the first time in my entire life. After getting divorced, I had intermittently dated and was even engaged once. But again, I never truly felt worthy of dating anyone with strong character qualities and values. During nursing school, I met and fell in love with one of my best friends. I thought he was the perfect man, but for whatever reason, timing was never right, and we have always kept our friendship platonic, in hopes that my nursing friend and I would work out. I found myself subconsciously making poor choices in the dating arena. I endured 17 years of mixed messages from my friends stringing out my hopes that maybe someday we would finally get together. Most of my other relationships were unhealthy, dysfunctional, and abusive. I found myself repeatedly being taken advantage of financially and sexually. I endured deceptive, degrading, and at times even abusive interactions. All of this only further reinforced and deepened my flawed, I'm a failure and not good enough feelings. Throughout these years, I always knew God was still there for me. I would occasionally get glimpses of the blessings he wanted to provide for my life, but I was too ashamed and too busy to have him truly involved and the center of my life. I frequently prayed to him and for years clung to Jeremiah 29:11 as my life anthem. For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. I kept waiting for God to rescue me from this life, to free me from my burdens and bondage, to help me to finally prosper and give me that wonderful future. However, my identity was in my career, my achievements and accomplishments, which rarely met my expectations or made me feel I was enough. I left God sitting on the sidelines of my life, just waiting to be my focus and actively included in my daily life. Despite my childhood resistance to my dad's psychological help, I still grew up understanding the importance and value counseling can play in a person's life. Proverbs teaches us, and there is a saying, a wise man has many counselors. And at various points in my life, I did seek out individual counseling of my own. I have had several different therapists and tried several different types of counseling, and I have found each to have had an impact on my life. I was first introduced to the idea of recovery through one of my guy friends who was involved in AA. I used to attend his AA meetings with him. I saw helpful concepts in the AA program, and I eventually started attending the Al-Anon meetings offered at the same time as his AA. Unfortunately, when he moved away, we stopped hanging out and I quit attending. My mom suggested I check out this program at church that was helping heal a lot of people called Celebrate Recovery. But my guilt and shame still had me avoiding church environment programs and activities. In 2012, God was beginning to whisper my name again. I had decided to attend the women's retreat here at Rolling Hills. At the retreat, I met some super fun women who shared with me that they attended Celebrate Recovery at the church. I finally thought maybe I should really go and check it out, and I began attending Wednesday night groups. The CR program made complete sense to me due to my previous AA and Al-Anon experience. I felt very comfortable with the principles and loved how I could apply them to my Christian faith. Unfortunately, I still had a couple areas of my life I wasn't willing to completely surrender. So although I enjoyed my time and the fellowship CR offered, I stopped attending for about 4 months and wouldn't walk back into these doors for another 10 months. In the spring of 2013, after 30 years of waiting, God finally said, "Enough." In an attempt to finally get my stubborn, bullheaded attention, God allowed my well-put-together and carefully planned by Kim life to be turned upside down and shattered into a zillion pieces. With nowhere left to turn but to God, I finally completely surrendered and I walked back through the doors of Celebrate Recovery, a broken, hurting, abused, yet completely surrendered woman. In November of 2012, I began having health problems, which eventually ended up completely debilitating me to the point I could no longer work and required back surgery. Despite making a good income, my finances were such that I barely made it from one paycheck to the next. in May 2013, when I had to go on short-term disability and then long-term disability, I didn't know how I was going to make it more than a month or two, let alone an extended period of time. During the next 12 months, I ended up having 5 surgeries, as well as numerous invasive tests and procedures. I had to fight the healthcare system that I worked in for the last 15 years, trying to get the treatments I needed to fix my back problems. I accrued thousands of dollars in medical debt in ineffective treatments, and the medical professionals who I worked with and trusted not following through with their job. I found out my much-needed IRS refund was being delayed because I was actually a victim of IRS identity theft. I also ended up having to have a breast biopsy and a hysterectomy during that year, and it seemed like it was just one thing after another. When I was still not able to return to work after a year, I ended up losing my job, and it seemed like I was losing everything I had spent my whole life trying to build. I used to joke about being in the trials of Job. My sister would say, "Don't joke about that. We haven't had a family member die." And then I have had 2 of them die 6 months apart. Despite my constant trials and tribulations, CR's 8 principles and 12 steps has helped me to remain completely surrendered and totally trusting in God and Jesus as my Lord and Savior throughout this entire process. I was able to see and acknowledge the many small blessings God was providing me, calling them my kisses from heaven. CR and my step study gave me new healthy friendships in the form of accountability partners, my sponsor, and supportive CR sisters. It gave me a safe place to begin to unpack the old negative thoughts processed in my head, and it helped me to identify that although I may look good on the outside, I was a mess and out of control on the inside, and my life truly was unmanageable. I found that although I had been a Christian all my life and I knew God had the power to help me, I didn't truly believe I mattered to him, which is why I sought so much approval from others and thought I needed to be perfect. I discovered I was an abused woman, yet I was also the abuser. I needed to take responsibility for the abuse I had perpetrated on myself for 47 years. I needed to start identifying all the inaccurate false beliefs I had about myself. I learned how to forgive myself and those I had allowed to mistreat me. I also stopped hiding behind being mistreated and thinking of myself as a victim. I have begun to establish new, healthier ways of acting and responding, and most of all, I have learned it is okay to wait on God's timing, direction, and answers. My life certainly isn't a well, nice, put-together package. I am realizing I still have more recovery work to do in the area of grief, but I now have more joy and pure gratitude in the everyday blessings of life than I ever have. I am still unemployed and have been in a very grueling process of looking for a new job, but I truly believe God has just the right position chosen for me. I had my 4th interview last week for a job I have been pursuing for the last 4 months, and on Monday, I actually officially received a job offer and proposal. I spent my morning in court today because I am having to file bankruptcy, and I still don't know whether I'm going to be able to keep my house or lose it in foreclosure. I truly trust God in every aspect of daily life and have been taking great pleasure in watching him put the pieces of my life back together the way he wants. My guilt and shame companions rarely pop up, and I am finally feeling free of much of the baggage I carried around with me. Again, just as I stated in the beginning, Philippians 1:6 says, "Being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus." I will probably always be in recovery, but I now wholeheartedly know no matter what I go through, I can count on God, my new skills, and my CR friends and family. For those of you who have been standing by me and working the program, I want to say three things. First of all, thank you for being here for me. I couldn't have gotten through the last 21 months without you. I am so grateful for each of you and the influence you have had on my life. Secondly, you get out of the program what you put into it. There are so many blessings when you practice the 12th step and 8th principle by giving back your time and abilities. Don't be afraid to step out of your comfort zone and get involved in service. Come to the monthly extended leadership training meetings and find out where you can serve. When I was finishing up my step study, I read, there are only two things you can't do in heaven, sin and share the good news to other people. This statement really got me thinking about where my priorities should lie. I recently heard a teaching about being a pipe or a bucket. For years, I was a bucket. Good things were poured into me, but I had no outlet. I clung to all the good I was given and never feeling worthy of flowing into anyone else. The good that I had that had been poured into me eventually became stale, stagnant, and stinky. CR has helped me to drain my stinky bucket and has given me an outlet to become more like a pipe, allowing God to flow through me. Now, as I am filled, I can help pour into and fill others. Practice the 12th step of service and be a pipe, not a bucket. Use the little bit of time, energy, and resources that God has given you here on this earth to make an eternal impact on the lives of others around you. Thirdly, same statement, different interpretation and focus. You get out of the program what you put into it. If you are still working the steps, truly work the steps. It is only when you are completely honest about your life, your successes and your failures, that we can truly turn every aspect of our life over to Christ's care and control, that we will be truly blessed far beyond what we can even imagine. Remember my favorite life verse, Jeremiah 29:11, For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. Well, I now want to take that two verses further. It goes on to say, then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. When you seek me and find me, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with your whole heart. Today's surrender is tomorrow's freedom. The key to happiness is your complete surrender and seeking of God in every aspect of your life. Does that mean life will be easy and problem-free? No. James 1:2-5 says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all who, without finding fault, and it will be given to you. God has certainly been working on my perseverance and maturity, but I have been growing and receiving so many blessings throughout this process and through my complete trust and faithfulness. For the newcomer, and those of you still struggling and full of hurts, habits, and hang-ups, I hope my testimony has helped you see a glimpse of the hope, celebrate recovery, and the very important step of choosing to commit all your life and will over to Christ's care and control. Keep coming back. Keep walking through those doors, even on those days when you think you shouldn't and don't want to. I missed out on 10 months of knowledge and blessings because I chose not to continue attending for 10 months. Those days when I think I don't want to be here have been some of the days God has spoken and touched me the most. Those are the days I seem to hear exactly what I needed to hear and have the connection with someone that truly blesses me just where I need it. We were all new once, and we are so glad you are here. I hope we can provide you with a safe place where you will feel no shame, condemnation, or judgment. You can approach any of the leaders and ask any questions you may have, and we will help you find the answers you may be looking for. Thanks for letting me share.